Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision on warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Philip Wingo, and in this episode, we'll be discussing the ABCANS Army's program. Established in 1947, the ABCANS Army's program gets its name from and is a cooperation between the armies of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States, to include the United States Marine Corps. Joining me today is Colonel Craig Madden, the Chief of Staff of the ABCANS Army's program, and Colonel Retired Rich Creed, the Director of the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate. Gentlemen, welcome to the show, and thank you both for being here.
Thanks, Phil. Good to be here.
Thanks, Phil. Our listeners will likely recognize our director, Mr. Creed, as a familiar guest on Breaking Doctrine, but I'd like to ask Colonel Madden, sir, can you tell us about your professional background and how you became the Chief of Staff for the ABCANS Army's program?
Sure, Phil, no worries, and hello to all our listeners out there. Look, I'm an Australian officer, and I came into ABCANS about 12 months ago. But who I am, I'm a combat engineer by trade, and took a relatively common entry into the Defence Force through the Australian Defence Force Academy, doing a Bachelor of Arts in International Politics and Human Resource Management, going on to graduate from the Royal Military College, Duntroon. I was fortunate enough as a captain to get posted to the US to do my EOD course down at Eglin Air Force Base. So that was quite interesting because and quite relevant to what we're going to talk about today, which is the interoperability between our Five Eyes armies, but also looking at joint interoperability. And down at Eglin Air Force Base, on an Air Force Base, I was at a US Navy school instructed by US Marines and US Army EOD techs as an international student. So that was a great introduction to life in the US, particularly down in sunny Florida. Throughout my career, I've been able to command at troop level, squadron level, at regimental level, and specialise not only into EOD, but also into MBC, or today's parlance is CBRNE, and done a lot in domestic recovery operations after natural disasters, floods and the like. In 2004, I was fortunate to command US Marine Corps and US Army Engineers and Operations in Iraq in counter-IED operations type roles. I've also seen service in Afghanistan, working very closely with the US there again as a mentor at 205 Corps down in Kandahar. I've done security operations with the British Commonwealth Games in 2006. And like most of our listeners and people here today, in COVID response, and where the Australian military was called in to assist the federal government in the COVID response. Prior to coming here, I was deputy commander of a combat brigade, and then came here to the US, based out of Crystal City, which is just south of the Pentagon in Northern Virginia.
Sir, thank you. It's great to have you. The ABCANS Army's program exists to assist member nations improve interoperability in the land domain by developing human, technical, doctrinal, and procedural solutions. For decades, ABCANS nations have served together in coalitions in pursuit of common objectives. Today, we'll discuss the program's history and how ongoing efforts increase mutual trust between our armies, enhancing our ability to fight together. Colonel Madden, many of our listeners are likely familiar with the close cooperation between ABCANS armies throughout multiple conflicts, but they may not understand the specific role the program has played in enabling our armies to fight together over the last 75 years. Can you talk a bit about the program's history and how its mission has evolved over time?
Sure, thanks. Look, first and foremost is, I'd like to say up front, we're not a treaty. So a lot of people might think like NATO, and definitely under Article 5 of NATO, where if one nation is challenged or attacked, then the other NATO nations are obliged to come and defend under the NATO treaty. Well, ABCANS, it doesn't have. We're not a treaty like that. Rather, we're under a memorandum of understanding or an MOU, where the Five Eyes nations armies work together, collaborate together to improve interoperability, to identify interoperability gaps and mitigate those gaps. So, bit of history. We started in 1947 after World War II, where Canada and the UK and the US said, hey, guys, we've got to continue this relationship that we formed during World War II, and as we move forward, keep that interoperability going so that when we hit the battlefield again together, it's relatively seamless. Over the years, Australia was an observer, then became a full member in 1963. We sponsored New Zealand to come in as an observer, and then they became a full member in 2006. And then over the years, we realised that the United States Marine Corps play a large part in the land domain as well. And they'd been an observer for a while. And in 2004, the United States Marine Corps became a member of ABCANS as well. So originally, like NATO, which was the standardisation of equipment predominantly, a little bit on training, a little bit on tactics, but it was a standardisation of the 5.56 round, for example, and 155 artillery shells, so that the tow hook on a truck type stuff. So very similar to what NATO was doing. However, things changed quite significantly after 9/11, when the change in security environment demanded improved responsiveness by the Five Eyes nations, and in particular the land domain. What was the relevance of ABCANS? And the focus really went from standardisation into interoperability, so that we could hit the ground, for want of a better term, hit the ground running. So the program, the ABCANS program, strives to achieve the highest levels of cooperation and collaboration amongst the Five Eyes members, America, Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, to get that interoperability. We use the terminology develop standards, but those standards lead to us being interoperable when we hit the battlefield.
Thanks, sir. Mr. Creed, discussions on interoperability often focus on the physical dimension of establishing compatible networks and equipment, but the recently signed FM-316, the Army and Multinational Operations, describes it as much more. It indicates interoperability spans all Army warfighting functions with human, procedural, and technical dimensions that commanders must consider. From your perspective, why is the ABCANS Army's program an important part of the U.S. Army's interoperability efforts?
Yeah, thanks, Phil. You kind of touched on, I think, the point of departure for interoperability is really human and procedural. You know, when you think about the ABCANS Army's program, you're really talking about, you know, five English-speaking, count the Marines. I think they speak English.
Rich, that's a bit tough.
It is. Well, we always talk about English. You know, we're separated by a common language.
Yeah. Well, the rest of us speak proper. It's you Americans that put Z's into all the words, say.
I know the five English-speaking armies and the Marine Corps. You know, there's a reason why you kind of think about Army interoperability, because we have this shared cultural heritage, if you will. That you say it's kind of a natural fit. The other piece is we've been fighting together since the First World War, in Europe, Afghanistan, Vietnam, right?
Did you want a fun fact about World War One?
Yeah.
Do you want to give a fun fact about World War One and the Five Eyes? So when the first U.S. troops of many tens of thousands of U.S. troops started arriving into the Western Front in France, did you know that the first U.S. brigade was put underneath an Australian corps? So General Sir John Monash, who was the Australian Corps commander, actually took command as the U.S. troops were being acclimatized, or in your parlance, acclimated, into the Western Front. the first troops were under the command of the Australians. There you go.
That is a very good fun fact. Hey, so, but getting back to human and procedural side of things, I think what makes ABCANS important is if we can build consensus in a small group of five armies, five nations, land forces, you have the basis for expanding that approach to interoperability to on a broader front with other allies and partners. And so I always think when we do our ABCANS events, one of the, it's not a, a written rule, but it's certainly something that is honored as we work through interoperability solutions, is that nothing we do in ABCANS can conflict with what we've agreed to do in NATO, right? Because three of the nations are also part of NATO. So if we're going to have interoperability standards amongst the three NATO nations plus Australia and New Zealand, then the work we do there in a relatively small group, as long as we're not violating any of the standardization agreements that we've had with NATO, there's this ability to actually attack problems from a small group perspective, come up with solutions, because it's much easier to come to consensus with five or six entities than it is with 32.
A lot more agility, flexibility,
And then everything we do in ABCANS ultimately gets shared. Like when we don't, you know, start with a blank sheet of paper necessarily when we're working on interoperability issues. There may be solutions from other places, you know, things that we've worked on with NATO that may be a point of departure for addressing a new problem or a new challenge. And then the modernization aspects of this, you know, I think one of the things is armies continuously have to modernize. And so we want to modernize on a course that brings us closer together as opposed to becoming divergent over time. The other unique thing I think about ABCANS that's hugely important is our focus on Indo-PACOM in terms of the, our national security interests. You know, NATO is was obviously for a very long time focused on Europe. ABCANS is more of a global focus just because of the membership, right? And so we're not focused on the European continent, and we're not purely focused on Indo-PACOM or the Pacific theaters. We've been kind of agnostic in that regard. But as our national security focus in the U.S. has increased its attention on threats in the Indo-PACOM area, all of a sudden, ABCANS becomes very important because there's shared interest between Australia and New Zealand. Canada is also a Pacific nation and us in terms of, hey, if we were going to conduct operations over there, what kind of things do we need to consider? And it makes us consider different modernization efforts and different types of technical interoperability because that area of operations would be so different. And there would there is no other way of doing that. So I think that's a powerful aspect to ABCANS and why it's important. I mean, we do exercises. A lot of people don't know because if the most of our Army doesn't spend a lot of time in the Pacific, but Talisman Sabre, all of those things over there, we typically do that with the Australian and New Zealand armies.
So Talisman Sabre being a big, well, it has a huge land domain component. It's joint. So we have the Australian and U.S. Air Force, the Australian and U.S. Navy, as well as the U.S. Marines and Australian Army doing a significant amphibious landing operation and then land ops in open field in North Queensland, which is every second year. So, yeah, a very good point. Not necessarily under an ABCANS umbrella.
No.
But the ABCANS standards, which then leads into doctrine, which is what we're all about in getting that interoperability going, is certainly a great driver and key to our ability to work together. And we test that every second year on Talisman Sabre. Yeah.
So, you know, Five Eyes has been an acronym that's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And people say, well, what's the difference between ABCANS and Five Eyes? And I said, well, as far as, you know, anyone in the audience knows, you don't need to think about them as differently, but our focus is on land forces.
Correct.
And the conduct of operations in a multinational environment amongst our armies plus the Marines. And so That's where its utility comes in. It's focused specifically down on land forces interoperability.
Thanks, sir. So we've talked a bit about the program's goals of improving interoperability specifically within the land domain. But Colonel Madden, we also recognize there's other organizations out there whose mission it is to improve interoperability among allies and partners. Can you talk to us a little bit about where the APCANS Army program focuses its interoperability efforts and perhaps some of the products the program produces?
Thanks, thanks, Phil. As Rich and I were just talking about, APCANS is a subset of Five Eyes, and what we bring to the table is that focus on land domain. Yep, we 100% recognise that in the modern battlefield, the modern battle space, we cannot operate alone. So we know that we're in a joint space, but we bring interoperability to the land domain first and foremost. Now, that's a huge remit. And so we try to bring that down to some key areas. And at the moment, the key areas that we are focusing on, there are six of them. And in the context of achieving command interoperability from the battle group up to the divisional level, understanding that we're going to work in a JTF or a core or something bigger. And so those areas, those six areas that we bring our focus onto to get that command interoperability is Command Information Systems, or CIS, Information Knowledge Management, Intelligence Surveillance and Reconnaissance, or ISR, that Intelligence Fusion, FIRES. Now, yeah, FIRES is huge, but it is a subset that we're looking at. And then the old chestnut of sustainment, and getting the five Eyes land domain elements to be able to integrate into that sustainment area to keep our armies into the field. So that's it. That's the land domain construct under a two-star APCANS-led division headquarters. And the way that we actually tackle those is that we identify interoperability gaps, and then we look at how we mitigate those gaps. And to mitigate those gaps, the strategies that we use is we produce certain documents. And those documents include written standards, written technical statements of requirement, publications, which could be handbooks for a staff officer who sits on a division headquarters, and he can refer to that handbook on, if I've got a New Zealand company under my US command, what does that New Zealand company look like? What's its roles and responsibilities? What type of weapons does it carry? So how's best to employ it? And just going back to standards then are ratified by nations. And once they're ratified by nations, generally they go into doctrine. And as you know, doctrine then ends up in the schoolhouses, are taught to the Marines and to the soldiers. And so that when we hit the battlefield, battle space, we're doing things similarly together.
Colonel Madd, you mentioned how the program produces various standards and publications. How would you describe the program's overall role in doctrine development?
Yeah, that's a good question, Phil. And just to follow on from what I said about the priority focus areas, and they are critical to getting that interoperability going. Like NATO, the APCANS Army's program achieves levels of interoperability in targeted areas, and but also the areas that we look at is where there are holes in doctrine between our armies. And as I alluded to before, we look at mitigation strategies. So a contemporary example is counter UAS. So lessons learned out of Ukraine is the proliferation of off-the-shelf as well as military-developed UAVs, UAS, being used across all areas of the battle space. And so right now, there is no doctrine on counter UAS per se, or comprehensive doctrine. And so We've identified that as an interoperability gap because none of the armies have a particular way of doing it. But the ways we are doing it, we recognise that we are developing in isolation. So that is an area of interoperability gap that we need to mitigate. So what do? We form project teams or working groups with subject matter experts from each of the five nations to look at the issue and then to work through a practical sense on how we would provide counter UAS. Once a report or a standard has been written, that is then sent to the nations for comment and ultimately for ratification. Once it's been ratified by the five nations, it finds its way into doctrine and then the doctrine into the schoolhouses, into SOPs and into TTPs. A real life example would be, well, I'll go back a step. We don't always start with a blank piece of paper. We, as Rich alluded to before, he talked about NATO and then ABCANS is a lot more flexible. It's a lot easier to get consensus amongst five rather than 32 nations. However, when we start to look at mitigating gaps between the five nations, first thing we do is, has NATO looked at this? And so we do look very closely at NATO doctrine and NATO standards. And if we find something similar or related, we will take that and unashamedly copy it and plagiarise it to make it relevant to our five nations. Or we may just simply whack a ABCANS cover sheet on it and call it ABCANS standard. And that way, Australia and New Zealand will formally adopt what the US, UK and Canada have already adopted through their NATO membership. An example of that is the NATO staff system, or the British call it the NATO Continental Staff System. So when I was posted to Iraq, I was told, right, I'm going into the three shop. So I was able to speak the same language, knowing that three meant ops. And therefore I had in my mind, as a result of my doctrine, Australian doctrine and my Australian training, I knew what the three shop does, where it sits in the command and control, who and its roles and responsibilities. And so I was immediately able to slip into a US multinational core headquarters and do the job. And that is one small example of having a standardisation and interoperability between NATO nations, but in particular our five nations. Another example is when I hit the road travelling in Hummers up and down the length and breadth of Iraq, being able to talk the same language with a Medivac 9 liner. It wasn't foreign to me. I didn't have to learn something new. It was off the shelf for me, and my US counterparts and the US Medivac team were able to speak the same language. And another small example of how this interoperability makes it easier for us to seamlessly come together on the battle space and work together.
Well, you know, so I'm going to jump in here too, since we're going to talk about influence on doctrine development, because I think it's rather significant. So our point of departure, and this gets to, you know, FM30, our capstone operations, but it's been true for decades, that when we say U.S. Army forces are conducting operations, we're doing that in a joint and multinational environment. It is a very rare.
Very rare.
That we're doing a U.S. Army forces only piece.
Agreed.
And it's never not joint.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that gets lost sometimes when people say, well, it's the Army's program, so you're only thinking about the operations on land. Well, operations on land aren't conducted in a vacuum. They're conducted as part of a joint and multinational approach. So interoperability is inherently, even if you're starting from the bottom up, from a land force perspective, there's always going to be a joint component to it because each of our armies is part of a respective joint force, right? So I think that's one. But on the doctrine side, we have to account for the fact that we expect U.S. Army forces to be able to operate with their allies and partners. And so we mention NATO standards. We mention ABCAN standards explicitly. We've published a couple books having to do with network operations and command and control systems over the last 18 months that are entirely based on ABCAN standards. We took the ABCAN standard and we turned it into Army doctrine, and it is word for word the same as what was developed by ABCANs, and that will influence the NATO publications eventually as well.
Yeah, it goes up the way,
right.
Too. Yeah.
So I think that's important. But I don't think you can overstate the impact that what the program does in terms of doctrine development. It's something that we just have to keep, you know, we keep it front and center as we work through our revisions to doctrine, at least in the U.S. Army.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Creed, we talked a bit about U.S. Army doctrine and how it describes the critical role of operating with allies and partners that will never go it alone, so to speak. Let's tie this a bit to FM30 if we can. Within 3.0, the book describes the Army's one of the Army's primary focus in competition is preparing for large-scale combat operations, with one of those key activities being improving multinational interoperability, much like we've talked about that the program strives to do. Can you talk a little bit about how you see the program helping in that regard, specifically in establishing those interoperability readiness standards needed to operate in crisis or conflict?
Yeah, so we basically have this continuum that we say we're in continuous competition with adversaries. But our context is, you know, competition, which is kind of day-to-day, crisis, you know, something bad's going on and we have to react and our respective armed forces have to get involved to avert a conflict. And then conflict if that is unavoidable. We're always preparing for conflict, right? That's what our armed forces are for. But you spend the majority of your time preparing for conflict, and you're doing that during competition. If you wait until a conflict or a crisis, you're not going to have time. And so that model informs a couple things about our approach to the program. The first is accounting for time. So there's a crisis, and we bring our armed forces together in a two-star headquarters or something smaller or something larger. How long does it take you to be able to conduct those operations, right? Well, your level of interoperability drives that. And so our goal has always been from time of notification, or maybe not always, but certainly for the last decade or so, you know, from time of notification, some number of days until those forces are able to conduct operations. So you obviously want to have fewer workarounds less time learning. And so the time you spend learning and working out all of the details is during exercises. It's during those experiments. It's during war games. It's during operations that we're conducting that are below the level of armed conflict, you know, around the world. And so that's why we say, you know, the most important thing you do during competition is to prepare for war. Mm. And if that's your mindset, that that's what you're always trying to do, it lends a sense of urgency to these interoperability issues, particularly the thorny ones, the ones that cost money, the ones that involve making decisions about what we're going to buy and field and so forth.
And people may say, oh, it's all too hard, all too complex. But the old adage, train hard, fight easy,
right,
is what we've got to go after. So I agree with you. It just having unilateral exercises or activities does not prepare us for the reality. And as you stated before, Rich, the US are not going to go into a conflict on their Pat Malone, which is Australian slang for by themselves.
Yeah. Cowboy it up.
Cowboy it up. So you're exactly right. Let's train as we fight, and that is in a multinational, particularly Five Eyes environment.
I'll tell you the other thing that I think is neat about the program is the way it's been structured so that there are program leads who are representing the program, but yeah. they're from all the different nations.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right? And so you're advocating for, in that duty position, when you're serving, you know, in an ABCANS role, you're advocating for all five nations in terms of what we call warfighting functions and we call capability groups. But yeah. You're not representing your country. You're representing all five countries.
100%. And the five nations, the five armies plus the United States Marine Corps all have an equal part, an equal voice, and it's equally owned by all five armies and the Marine Corps, equally owned. And so just by its mere structure, the overarching big bosses is not one particular nation or one particular army. It's all five armies and the Marine Corps equally own it. So the structure is such that what is known as the Executive Council, which provides the strategic guidance and the overall authority, sits at the very highest levels of our armies with the Vice Chief of Staff Army, so General Mingus in the US context, and the Deputy Chiefs of Army in the Australian and New Zealand context, and the equivalents in the UK and Canada context as well. So you've got 4-star and 3-star generals who provide that authority and who sit at the top, but they equally own the program. So you're exactly right, Rich. The listeners may or may not have picked up, but I'm Australian.
No.
It's true. It is true. And I know you guys speak with an accent, but I don't. I represent in forums around the Pentagon, even around the Australian Embassy, not as an Australian, but exactly as you said, Rich, as representative of ABCAN. So I represent our five armies' generals. And so that's who I am and indeed who the staff are. So underneath those generals who meet once a year sit a lower board or the program governance board who meet several times a year, and they're usually a 1 or 2-star general who usually their daytime posting is inside Army headquarters in the respective nations, and they're known as the national directors. And they're my day-to-day go-to guys who keep the lid on whatever rogue chief of staff is sitting in ABCANS at the time, to make sure that I'm not going off track, that I'm not doing bizarre, kooky, crazy stuff as far as standards and doctrine and the like goes, that I'm not bringing crocodile skin bags as giveaway presents or as part of what we should be doing with crocodile wrestling and the like, and throwing too many shrimps in the barbie, as you like to stereotype us Aussies doing. But as I said, I wouldn't do that anyway because I'm an ABCANS guy, not an Aussie guy in this role. And then underneath the national directors, you come across the program office is where the permanent staff of the program sit. So there's 10 of us. My role is rotating, my role being the chief of staff role, is rotating between the five nations. I took over from Canadian and a Kiwi will take over from me. I sit in that position for 2 to 3 years. Underneath me, I've got about five SO1s or lieutenant colonels who head up various specialist areas and those specialist areas we call capability groups. And those are command, sense, act, shield and sustain. And then we have some supporting groups in training and lessons, and then another area that we call concepts and capability development, which looks at some futures and experimentation development type thing. And then we have a operations officer and some other administration staff to round out the 10 people who are permanently posted to the program. And then, as Rich alluded to before, there's other secondary duties farmed out amongst the nations. They include leads, what we call leads in the capability groups, and nations are allocated to those areas. And I forgot to mention national coordinators who sit at the SO1 or SO2 level in the various nations, and they're our primary point of contacts into those nations. But how is all the big work done? How do we write the standards? How do we write the technical statements or requirements? Well, once we've identified where the interoperability gaps are and we've identified where the work needs to be done, the program office will go out to the nations and say, we need to bring together a working group of subject matter experts. And Rich alluded to this before. And those subject matter experts are identified by the nations, come together specifically to do the work on mitigating these gaps, and then those working groups are dissolved and go back to their daytime job. And so that's where the engine room is in these people brought together temporarily, but because of their knowledge and their subject matter experts under the umbrella of APCANS.
Well, gentlemen, we've talked quite a bit about the program's mission, organization, and also what the program produces. But most recently, the APCANS program had its annual meeting in Crystal City to really develop the plan for the upcoming year. So, Colonel Madden, can you talk a little bit about what the program plan for this coming year, 24-25, looks like, and if there's any projects in particular you'd like to highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, sure, Phil. And another fair question is, you blokes have been going for 75 years. What the hell have you been bloody doing during the 75 years? Why are we interoperable already?
Oh.
Why are there still gaps?
Oh,
what's
yeah.
going on there? And that's a fair question, Phil, and thanks for asking that. So, as you know, we don't stand still. Our armies are constantly evolving and moving. We constantly change structures. Technology is evolving and changing. And as Rich just announced there about that information flow, big data coming through. The need for us to adapt to new systems, new material. But unfortunately, Phil, unfortunately, the enemy has a voice too. And as the enemy adapts and evolves, we've got to adapt and evolve in the way that we do things, in the way that we act on the battlefield, and therefore the way we interact with our allies in the Five Eyes context, in the land domain context. And so, fortunately, the likes of you and me, the likes of Rich and me, we'll never be out of a job. There's always going to be gaps in interoperability opening up as a result of all those things I just mentioned. And so we'll always need to come together to work as a team to identify those gaps and therefore to mitigate those gaps. So you mentioned the annual meeting, and not surprisingly, the annual meeting meets annually, just to clarify that. So every April we have an annual meeting where we take the strategic guidance from our generals, from our executive council at the end of the previous calendar year, and because they meet in late November every year, provide that strategic guidance, which we then distill down to look how we are going to plan out our year, run our project teams, our working groups, bring together our subject matter experts, and tackle and mitigate those interoperability gaps. So in the 24-25 annual plan, some areas that we are looking at includes cyber and electromagnetic activities, or CEMA, information exchange requirements, air and missile defence operations, which includes starting to get into that thorny issue of counter-UAS. The ever-going Mission Partner Network, the MPN, or some people, or the broader MPE, the Mission Partner Environment, with radios and technology constantly evolving and changing. And it's not just... We are part of a larger ecosystem, and that ecosystem is peacetime policy in our five nations butting heads up against what we're trying to achieve as a military on the battle space. An example I'll give is we have a standard of exchanging classified material between our five nations, yet you turn up for a certain activity in Australia and our joint policies, and I say policies, it's not law, it's joint policies say, oh, we can't have a foreign, inverted commas, we can't have a foreign nation put their hardware, connect their hardware through a USB stick or through a cable into our systems to look at classified material, and which doesn't make sense. That's a peacetime civilian policy in the Department of Defence, which clashes with what we're trying to do on the battlefield and working together. So there's some of the issues that we come up against. It's not always our own doing. It's sometimes outside our sphere, but we'll continue to work at it. Other areas that we're looking at emerging is land operations in the littoral environment. And you think, the US Marine Corps, they've got that covered. They got it down pat. They know exactly what they're doing. Well, yes, they are experts in that field, but there's still a lot to be done. And not every nation has a dedicated Marine Corps. And Marine Corps don't have the mass of which the US Army can assist and bring to the fight. So that is an area that we are working on, our land operations in the littoral environment. Not so much ship to shore, but once we're going over the beach and moving inland from the beach, how do we do that in a land operations? Other areas that we're looking at in our annual plan is our role in Project Convergence Capstone 5. For those unaware, Project Convergence is a Five Eyes activity. It's an experiment looking at emerging technologies of AI, machine learning, autonomous vehicles in the battle space, and looking at how ABCANS can get ahead of the curve and look at future technologies, therefore future interoperability gaps. And so we get heavily involved in Project Convergence Capstone 5 as well.
That last one, I mean, that involves... So we talk about all of the technology piece, but there's also, you know, Intel Fusion, you know, in a coalition environment, right? There's a fires piece to that we're all trying to sort out. And these linkages amongst the ground forces with air and space and even cyberspace capabilities that are held at different levels in our relative armed forces. So, I mean, there's a lot of detail stuff that falls right into the priorities of the program, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Sir, thanks for that. As we look forward beyond 24 and 25, kind of outward looking towards the overall vision and strategy of the program, can you briefly describe what you envision the program to be in the future, specifically in line with the 2035 strategy that was signed a few years ago?
Yeah, sure. So we've been talking about the here and now with those six priority focus areas, and then I've rattled off a couple of interoperability gaps of which we're working on at the moment with the SEMA and the information exchange and air missile defence. But as a program, as with any good army documentation and structure, we do have a broader strategy to look forward, and that broader strategy provides several objectives, and those objectives are for the ABCANS program to remain relevant in delivering solutions to interoperability gaps, and to share with our partners. So we can be small, agile, flexible at our level, but to share with our NATO partners the information and our solutions to the interoperability gaps between armies. And this is all leading to present multiple dilemmas to our adversaries and to deter them from any aggression that they may be thinking about or showing. Other areas is objectives of the program is the broader modernisation of the Afghans Armies and United States Marine Corps through our work and through our publications, and also to influence training where we can, to train together, to be collaborative where we can. And as I was saying to Rich before, it's that train hard and to fight easy.
Thanks, sir. Well, gentlemen, thanks for joining us today and for the excellent discussion. As we wrap up, is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to cover for our listeners?
Hey, I just would throw out that, you know, one of the great aspects, and I keep this really simple, of the Afghans Armies program is it's an opportunity to learn from each other. None of the armies have all these things figured out, but taken together, when you get a bunch of smart folks who are dedicated to this idea of being able to fight better with your allies and partners, you get a synergy, I guess is the right word, of perspectives shared by a fairly common culture that allows you to address problems in a way that is more collegial, perhaps, than in other places. And so when we do our exercises or we're conducting operations, I think the opportunity to learn from each other is important, and the opportunity to refine the work that we've already been doing is vastly important. And the other piece is, and this is a particularly, I think, a U.S. Army shortcoming at times, is sometimes we're not familiar with things that we've agreed to do. So that if we're going to do an exercise, or even more importantly, a real-world operation, then the Army should be familiar, you know, dust off those standards, and we can help people find those if they don't know how to do that. But particularly when you're talking about command and control systems, there are some very technical things out there that we've all agreed to. And for everything else to work, we got to make sure that people understand those.
100%. And just to echo what you're saying there, Rich, if you do identify when you're working with one or more of those five nations' armies, and you identify an interoperability gap between you and your colleague from another country, then by all means, drop a line to the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate. It doesn't have to be eloquent, doesn't have to be a university-level essay, just a few dot points to highlight what you see as an interoperability issue, and that allows it to be picked up, and we can work on mitigating those gaps.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the crew and special doctrine here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. The executive producer of Breaking Doctrine is Mr. Ted Crisco, and our editing and sound is provided by Mr. Zarek Fry of 29 Pixel Studios. Please don't forget to subscribe on YouTube, Apple, Audible, or Spotify podcasts, and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Phil Wingo, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.